Blog Talk Radio.
This is One-on-One with Jasper Cole, Hollywood's bad guy, and so much more. Actor, talent manager, producer, and more. Now he's sitting down with today's top newsmakers from entertainment, politics, pop culture, and beyond. This is One-on-One with Jasper Cole.
In the house. Howdy, everybody. This is Jasper Cole. We are live and we are back after about a six-week hiatus. You are coming to us with us right here, and I'm in Palm Springs, California. But my trusted co-host is in Los Angeles. Please welcome, everybody, the one and only Mr. Ralph Gordon.
What a piece of work is man. Hello, Jasper. I thought I'd lead the show with a snippet from the musical Hair.
And, you know, it has been a coon's age since I have seen you or talked to you. And for all of you out there, I am talking about a fucking raccoon. Don't start at me with your PC stuff about calling Ralph a coon. I meant a raccoon, and Ralph doesn't know he's black anyway. Go ahead.
Okay, so anywho, with all of that said, I am happy to be back. I am fully aware of being Negro and love it. So, no, I really do, Jasper, because I embrace it. Well, what choice does anybody have? Even nobody can change their race, right? Like, we can change our gender, but you can't change your race. Can you imagine?
No, like, Michael Jackson tried. Remember, he bleached his
skin. Okay, it's like, hi, I'd like to be Latino, please. Thanks.
So, don't forget that's Alec Baldwin's wife. Remember, she pretended to be Hispanic up until she got busted recently.
Oh my goodness!
But no, for all of you who don't know that, Google Alec Baldwin's wife. I can't even think of her name now. But you're right; it's very hard to hide your race. And why should we? I mean, I'm a quarter Native American, and we cannot say Indian anymore. We can't say Indian because it offends people. So
yeah,
we have to say
so
Native American.
God, it's such a drag to think that have changed. Like, I liked saying Oriental. That always made it seem really Asian to me to say Oriental. It seemed more exotic. You know, and then you texted me that we can't say master bedroom anymore.
It's primary bedroom,
bathroom. Wow. Well, you know,
I mean, it's a good thing we're not over at the Celebration Theater, because we would not be surviving with all of our politically incorrect statements, I guess.
Oh my goodness! Yeah. What a celebration.
Boomerang.
Okay, yeah, and boomerang, yes.
You know,
it is just like, wow, the LGBTQ theater AI plus is being rocked with scandal and allegation and accusation, and wow.
Well, for listeners who are outside of Los Angeles, we are referring to the long-running LGBTQ live theater called the Celebration Theater in Los Angeles. There was a big op-ed in the Los Angeles Times this past weekend that was written about alleged sexual harassment and inappropriate behavior going on at the theater that's been on for decades, I guess. And it was kind of brought to the surface, and one of the people interviewed is, our listeners are familiar with Michael Taylor Gray, who has been part of our Breaking the News segment over the last few years. And Michael Taylor Gray, you know, expressed his opinions about his experiences there. So, yeah, and Ralph and I, you know, we are like 6 degrees of separation, connected to several of the people there. For any of you interested, you just Google, I guess, Celebration Theater, LA Times, and you can read the article and make up your own mind. But, you know, I have opinions on it. I guess the bottom line is, where there's smoke, there's fire. And I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of truth to what's being said. Of course, the person that's being accused, we know very well. And, you know, I just think everybody, let everyone have their say, and people can make up their own minds. But I applaud everyone involved for speaking out. And, you know, hopefully whatever happens, behaviors will change and there'll be a new environment there. Because if we don't have that theater, there's no other LGBTQ theater in Los Angeles.
Right. No, yeah. I agree with everything you're saying. And according to the article, there's new management. So things have already started to change there. And and they'll continue to thrive like every other organization that is rocked with scandal continues to do. And
I do want to give a deep shout out to my friend Arlene Galanca, who passed away a couple of days ago. A lot of you will know her from maybe RFD and the Andy Griffith Show, but just sitcom after sitcom after sitcom and voiceovers. And she was one of my very first acting coaches when I moved to Los Angeles. And then we were both with Judy Fox Management for many years. And then later on, I had the great fortune of being her manager for a few years. In fact, I was her manager when she booked her very last job, which was King of Queens. At the same time, Norma Michaels was also on King of Queens. And Ralph, this was right before I met you, actually. And then Arlene had to retire because she started having memory problems, and which began a 10 to 12 year, you know, journey with dementia and Alzheimer's. But she was in a memory care facility in West Hollywood after she had moved out to Palm Desert for a while. So anyway, she had a wonderful just spirit all the way to the very end. And my condolences to her sister, Zoreen, in Chicago. That was her only remaining family, and she had some amazing nieces and nephews. So much love, Arlene, everyone. The great thing about when a performer dies, you know, their body of work lives on. So thank God for TV Land and Me TV channel and all those old reruns. So she'll live on forever. But Ralph, also, since we've been off, you know, that COVID has taken a great turn. I mean, we're certainly not over it, and we're still in a pandemic, but the state of California is one of the top 12 states now for being 70% vaccinated. And it's just been an amazing turn of events. And I just kudos to President Biden for getting these vaccinations out. Kudos to Fauci and the government. And it's amazing when you think about, it's really only June and the vaccinations have only been out there really for three months and how much has gotten done. So I know for my life, it's completely changed. I mean, we're still cautious. We still have to wear the mask in restaurants when you're seating, but we're back out enjoying friends and having people over to the house and going out to dinner again. And it's, I'm going to be traveling for 2 weeks. My dear girlfriend from Georgia is coming in tomorrow. Monique and her son Sean will be here for 6 days. So we're going to have house guests, and I don't know. It just, are you feeling in Los Angeles? Are you seeing more people out and about and things getting back to quote unquote normal?
Not necessarily, because I still haven't ventured out like that. So
right.
I went to Trader Joe's and it was status quo, and the traffic has always been full whenever I've gone out. But to your point, I haven't segued into being out and about yet.
Okay. Right. Well, it's just a totally different energy in the air. And, you know, it's a little weird that in less than 2 weeks, the mask moratorium is going to come, but be lifted in California. But I think you've seen recently every private business can make their own rules. And I think the majority of businesses in California are going to require some kind of mask wearing, because the funny thing, this whole thing about we're on the honor system of the vaccinations, it cracks me up. But the other thing I want to quickly talk about is, only in this country would we be such dumbasses that, Ralph, did you see that some states are having to offer like full college scholarships, you know, incentives. Biden's doing this thing. The president is endorsing this thing about get a vaccine, have a beer. Like one of the beer companies is, I mean, can we endorse like alcoholism and vaccination?
Wow.
At the same time, it's kind of embarrassing because I'm working with a company in Toronto right now, for instance. You know, Toronto, Canada is way behind us. I mean, they are still on a lockdown. My producers I'm working with have just gotten their first vaccinations. I mean, so they're looking at us going, wow, you guys are having to, you know, give money incentives to get some people to get vaccinated, which is scary. But I don't know. I mean, the good news is, you know, we're getting closer to the percentages that Biden had wanted. I'm just glad that people in my immediate life are all vaccinated. And everybody
I feel.
Spending time with are vaccinated.
I agree. Now, what do you do when you're with somebody and that you find out they're unvaccinated? You just make sure you're wearing your mask, right?
Yeah, just wear the mask. And it's kind of like I think you and I talked about this years ago with HIV. I mean, I used to just assume everybody was positive. Mm-hmm. So even though we've all been vaccinated, I'm still not hugging people, kissing people, shaking hands with people. We had some friends over for dinner, and I don't know if there is something in the gay culture, especially of those of us of a certain age, where certain gay men want to kiss each other on the lips. I don't know if you've noticed that, like at parties. And the one friend immediately like went for a hug and a kiss. And I was like, oh, no. I was like, oh, no, I can't. I don't think I'm ever going back to that, you know.
Oh, wow. And you guys were maskless?
Oh, yeah. We've all been vaccinated. But it was, but still, I just didn't.
I'm so glad to hear you say this, Jasper. I hugged a woman for the first time, the first person besides my mother throughout this pandemic. I hugged her mother, sadly passed away. And my friend was so nice enough. I wrote you to donate all leftover supplies that her mother was using for Rose. And we took a selfie together. We both stayed masked. We're both vaccinated. But when we were in my driveway, she wanted to hug. And rather than deny that hug, I hugged her. And I thought, okay, in this brief moment, if I had had my druthers, I would not have hugged. But because she said, let's hug, I thought we both are wearing masks, we're outside, and we're vaccinated. So I feel like, you know, we've done the most that we can do. So that was my first hug in all this time.
So, yeah. And I'm like you, like I have hugged a few people, but the kissing part was like, you know what I mean? It was just, I've never been really comfortable with that in general.
You never kissed anyway, but I know what you're saying. Gay men do that all the time. And we shouldn't just say gay. I mean, no, we should. We're talking about gay and LGBT.
Well, it's also, you know, you're right. It's also cultural. Like Italians are very, you know, certain Greeks and Italians are, you know, men kiss each other all the time. I'm just not that, like, I'm not a big hugger. I'm not a big hugger anyway, especially if we're not close or if I just meet you for the first time, you know, but especially now, I've just become a lot more germophobic post COVID, regardless of
COVID. We can't help it. You know, that's why there's so many transitions happening and people are saying that, you know, because we've been isolated for so long, things are different and things are, it's like, this has all been denied us for over a year. And now it's all being released again. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not ready to just, you know, hug and kiss, you know, because it's so close to being it's so close to just being taboo. It's like, mm-hmm. I mean, to your point about HIV, when my friend was diagnosed all those years ago in 1988, we used to always smoke joints behind each other. I mean, pass joints back and forth to each other. And then when he announced he had AIDS, it was like, it was so weird to all of a sudden just stop passing the joint.
Mm-hmm.
And we never did. And we continued to pass the joint. And at that time, it was like my thinking, I mean, this was like when he had lesions on his arm. So it was still like, oh my God, it's so scary, but something wouldn't let me stop passing that joint because mm-hmm. it's like, how do you, it was just so weird. Like we always did it. And now I get this information and now we just abruptly stop. So we never stopped, you know, and the rest is history. So it's like,
well, and also like people have to remember back with the early days of AIDS, we didn't know for a long time how you could catch it. I mean, mm-hmm. like, until they figured out it was only through, you know, sex or blood transfusions. So a lot of people were freaked out about kissing or touching or, you know, that's why I don't know if listeners are watching the show Pose on FX. This is the last season and it's coming down to the finale. And it really is back. It's for those of us who lived during the AIDS crisis of the 80s and the 90s, it's a retelling and a reliving of that period. And it's just so powerful because it just takes you right back to that time period. And Billy Porter is just knocking out of the park. And I think since we have been on, you know, he came out and talked about he's been living with HIV for the last 14 years. So kudos to him for speaking his truth and living his truth. But also, guys, I just, before I forget, you know, please remember to follow us on social media. I want to thank everybody. Our Instagram account has just blown up. We've gotten thousands and thousands of new followers, as has at Jasper Cole Says. And now I have an official fan page on Instagram at Official Fan Club. Thank you to Lisa Rodrigo, publicist, who does my fan page, but is also the reason our guest today, actor Dan White from General Hospital, is a client of hers. So I'm so excited that he's going to be joining us in about three minutes. He plays Elijah Crow on General Hospital. So I want to hear, you know, fellow actor, hear his journey. He was born in Mississippi and wanted to see how it was booking this job. And was it self-tape? Had he read for Mark Teschner before?
Oh, wow.
You know.
Yeah, we love those questions and answers.
Yeah, because he's a journeyman actor like we are. And everyone, Ralph Cole Jr. is starting to audition again. And it's just a matter of time before he will be gracing your television screens.
Thank you, Jasper.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Jennifer Stalen, our dear client, who is guest starring on the Pam and Tommy. It's called Pam and Tommy, but it's Pamela Anderson, Tommy Lee miniseries on Hulu. She's playing one of Pamela Anderson's best friends, Angie. And she's getting to work with Lily James and Sebastian Sands and Seth Rogen and just Nick Offerman and Craig Gillespie, the director who did I, Tonya. And guys, this is her first really network TV job. I mean, she was SAG eligible, but this is her first big TV booking, and she really booked a big one. So we are so thrilled, and she's getting to work like 6 days, and she's in almost every scene. And
it is so exciting, and she's beautiful. Absolutely. I just love watching her. She's so stunning.
Yeah, everyone, you can follow her at Jennifer Stalen, Stehlin. She's also a Raiderette cheerleader, which she booked last year. So it's, you know, it's a lot of great things happening for her, a lot of things happening for Newman Thomas. I want to say congrats to Lance Paul, Josh Anthony, and myself. We just got a new docuseries option by Buck Productions in Canada. My second show I'm working on with Buck Productions, and Buck Productions has their new series called The 40-Year-Old Property Virgin that has just dropped on HGTV. It's also on Discovery Plus. There was the show Property Virgin that's a big hit that's been on for 20 years, and this is a spinoff of that. It's property, first-time property owners after the age of 40. So for all of you HGTV fans, check it out, and it's on Discovery Plus as well. And then also, Ralph, we have just been binging these amazing shows. I don't know if people are watching. I know they are, but everyone's talking about Hacks with Jean Smart on HBO Max, and then also Mayor of Easttown with Kate Winslet we just finished. I'm telling you, Mayor of Easttown is some of the most brilliant dramatic writing I've ever seen. And the cast is just what I love about both Hacks and the Mayor of Easttown is, and the miniseries Halston also, there were no huge names beyond like Kate Winslet and Guy Pearce, but just these amazing seasoned veteran actors that you, they're not stars, but you, they've been working forever. And Dennis and I were talking about, it's one of those series where like down to the one line parts are perfectly cast. You know what I mean? Like not a single moment where anybody sort of takes you out of the story, which is kind of rare in television these days. But also, so Jean Smart plays Kate Winslet's mother in this drama. And then she gets to go and do this just amazing comedic turn in Hacks on HBO Max. So everyone's, I know most people are watching it. The thing about HBO Max, you have to subscribe to it. But regular HBO, you can just get, you know, and you can watch it on demand if you have Spectrum or whatever cable. So anyway, I want to give a show. Let's give a congrats to our friend Ronnie Butler for making his big new move, and he's now built and bought a great new house. And I'm telling you, Ralph, everyone's heading out to the desert. So you've got like five places you can now come and stay at.
I know, and everyone has been so generous with their invitation. So when the time comes, I will be back. Yes.
Yeah. Well, what's great about Lonnie. It is we're all able to just sort of live within driving to, you know what I mean? We can just expand outside of the city now. Everything's virtual and everything's like Zoom and very little having to be in the city. I mean, you're still so blessed to be in your childhood home, which is spectacular. So, and we're all just loving the fact Rose is doing well and turning that corner, and she made it through COVID. So we have a lot to be really grateful for.
And your father as well, speaking of pulling through COVID, who you'll be seeing in 2 weeks.
Yes, I'll get to be there for his 89th birthday and Father's Day, even though I leave I have to come back the day before Father's Day, but we will at least, we're going to do a joint birthday, Father's Day celebration. So
good,
which should work out. Yeah. So otherwise, I mean, we're good. We've just been continuing some home renovations here and, you know, self-taping. I had a self-tape today and, you know, clients are busier than ever and producing. And I think it's going to be a good second half of 2021, I think.
Good. That's good to hear. Thank you.
And so, well, we're just waiting for Dan to call in and everyone.
Great.
Yeah. And also everyone, you can also go to my website, jaspercole.com. And I want to thank Sunny McCord, who's been my webmaster for the last few years. She had her new baby. She had a baby daughter. She lives in Hawaii.
Sunny.
And then we have to also give a huge congrats to the one and only Erica Renee Davis from Breaking the News and from Newman Thomas' client and my co-producer on Down Home Design. She is 6 months pregnant with her new baby daughter that's going to be born in September. So it's just been, you know, she's going to be, we call it the COVID baby because she was, you know, she was, she figured she got pregnant around Christmas time in December. So I was thinking about the other day, I was like, wow, you know, there's going to be a lot of kids born that can look back and say, I was conceived during COVID, which is like, you know, like the Spanish flu from 100 years ago. Right. And they talk about, the people that were babies or, you know, were born or conceived during that time. So, and then also, Ralph, I don't know if you watched, you know, the, if you've watched stuff on the Tulsa, Oklahoma massacre. It was the 100th anniversary a couple of days ago. And there's been all these amazing specials, especially as African-American, you know, I just, everyone please check it out because this is a story that none of us were taught in school at all. Greenwood, Oklahoma, which is one of the only places in the country 100 years ago where there were actual billionaires, African-American billionaires, had their own private planes, and they, you know, they called it the Black Wall Street and the whole massacre that took place. So everyone check that out. There's been so many documentaries and news specials happening. So, but listen, I think we have our very special guest on the line. So as I mentioned, our guest today is fellow actor and Southerner. I want to talk to him about being from Mississippi. He is currently starring as Elijah Crow on the always Emmy nominated General Hospital. At this time, please welcome actor Dan White. All right. Welcome, Dan. How are you?
Welcome. I'm fantastic. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good. This is Jasper. Say hello to Ralph, my co-host.
Hey, Ralph. Hey, Jasper. How y'all doing today?
Hey, Dan. Very well. Welcome aboard this crazy train called One-on-One with Jasper Cole. We are eager to hear your story.
Well, first of all,
thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, listen, I'm born and raised in Georgia. Ralph is born and raised in L.A., but his mom and, you know, his mom was from Louisiana. And now you're from Mississippi. Did you actually grow up in Mississippi or did you move away?
I was born in Jackson and I lived there for the first 4 years. And then I moved to back and forth between D.C. and Tidewater, Virginia. But I came back every summer until I was grown. And then when I got to college, I went to Jackson State. I actually went to Jackson State University for kindergarten, undergrad, and then I came back and taught after grad school. Jackson and Mississippi are very much, very much a part of my life. As a matter of fact, the auditorium at Jackson State University is named for my grandmother, and the federal building downtown is named for my grandfather, Dr. A.H. McCoy.
Oh, my God. That is amazing. Well, my brother lives in Carthage, Mississippi, which is a small town about 60 miles from Jackson. I don't know which direction. But so I would go out and spend a lot of time there. And he still lives there. He worked in the offshore oil business, which a lot of guys did in that area. But yeah, I know that. Wow. So we can talk about fried okra and all the,
making me hungry. Absolutely. I feel like I make the best catfish west of the Mississippi myself personally. So yeah.
Oh, that's so great, Dan.
Well, listen, our Southern accents will get stronger and stronger as the show goes on. That's what happens to me when I call back home or whatever. I'm just talking like, you know, as Southern as I can be.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I direct voiceover as well. And I'm working on a really cool video game right now. I can't reveal which one it is, but, I got excited, and I said, okay. So I was like, all right, here, read this way, but don't sound like you're from Mississippi. Maintain your accent if you have.
Well, you do have a great voice. You really do. So congratulations. Well, first of all, everyone can follow Dan. I guess Instagram is probably the best, at that Dan White. Are there other places, other social media outlets that people can follow you?
Yeah, I think that Dan White on that handle on Instagram is the best one.
Okay, perfect. Well, listen, there's so much, because we're both fellow actors and journeyman actors ourselves. And so the first question I want to first of all, congrats on the Elijah Crow role. You're kicking ass on the show. I actually got to watch. I'll be honest with you, full disclosure. I was flipping around the other day because I'm a huge fan of Cynthia Watros. And so, you know, and Jeff Kober, I know Jeff Kober from the show. And so I stopped because I saw Cynthia. I didn't even know she was on GH, right? And so I'm watching I'm watching the scene, and I'm like, God, who is this guy with her? He's really good, right? So I'm watching the scene, and then later I talked to Lisa Rodrigo, and she's talking about her new client and blah, blah, blah. And then I put two together that I was actually watching you and Cynthia. So,
oh, great.
I know.
Wow.
So tell everyone, first of all, was it a self-tape? Had you been in for Mark Teshner? Was it an offer? Or how did this whole role come about for you?
Oh, man. I'm so glad you asked. This story that I'm about to share means a tremendous amount to me, as an actor, as just as a man, in terms of perseverance and persistence. And I'll share. I'll start. So the first thing you asked was it a self tape? Yes, it was a self tape.
Yeah. Okay.
It was a self tape, and it was supposed to be. I mean, the listing was two episodes, maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I sent in the self tape and I booked off the self tape, and there was the first. There was one audition, no callback, no nothing. Now, that was a very special thing because, in answer to one of your following questions, had I been in for Mark Teshner before, Mark Teshner was my first professional audition out of Cal Arts.
Oh my gosh.
I graduated from Cal Arts in 2003, and May, like maybe the last week of May, first week of June, 2003, I was up for a contract role for One Life to Live, which was on the cast at the time. Since then, I've been up for four, maybe five, either contract or major recurring roles for Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Mark has continued to call me in and been a champion of my career since the beginning. And another funny thing, and he didn't even know this, I told him that recently, that first thing, the part about the first audition. But then the other thing was, my first job out of drama school was a series on Showtime based upon the Barbershop movies. And I was actually taking class with Mark Teshner when I booked that.
Well, I have to tell you there. So I tell people all the time, Dan, in the mid-90s or late 90s, I took an acting class. I took a scene study class with Mark Teshner. And seriously, to this day, I tell people all the time, he was the best acting coach I ever had. He was so good, in fact, that we wanted him to, you know, we wanted it to be an ongoing scene study class, but you know, he could only do it for like a 4 week period. And I mean, I kid you not, I say that to people all the time because, you know, he comes from the theater, he comes from New York. And this story that you're telling is so what I preach all the time and what Ralph talks about. And we tell young actors all the time, you know, when you just consistently do good work, you knock out of the park every audition, you just casting people will, if they will find the role for you when the opportunity is right. So go ahead. I'm not surprised you had studied with him as well.
Oh yeah. Thanks. Yeah. That was, I mean, that was it. It was funny because I had to miss one class for the screen test. And when I came back in class the next week, he says, well, how'd it go? And I was like, I booked it. And he was like, yes, you did. Like, you know, it was just a wonderful thing. But yeah, absolutely what you're saying. Stay in class and continue to study. I mean, there've been a couple of years out of the years since I've been out of school that I haven't been in class. Time I've been in class, you know, my booking ratio, my callbacks, everything always increase.
Right.
It's just how it is. I mean, it's just like anything else. I mean, if you wouldn't go run a marathon if you hadn't been getting the miles in for
training,
for, you know, 6 months before, a year before, continuously doing it. That's really what it is. I'm studying with Gloria Gifford right now. I've been working with her for the last 2 years.
Gloria's great. You know, she's a great actress on her own.
Absolutely. I mean, and super accomplished. Bill Cosby discovered her. Richard Pryor, she played Richard Pryor's wife in her first film. She's really fantastic. And what I love about her class is it really, really reminds me of drama school because we study, we're studying film and we're working on the classical stuff and the contemporary stuff all the time, and it's really a wonderful thing. And she actually coached me through a lot of my GH work because she's a huge fan of the show. So I mean, it's really been I've really had some wonderful teachers and just people who have just been a really real blessing to me just as a person and to me the actor.
Well, you know, another thing you said that's so important is the fact that your Elijah was, you know, initially meant to be a couple of episodes. You know, that's another thing that happens, especially in daytime. You know,
yeah.
I tell people all the time as well, we can go down the list of roles that were starting out as like a day player. They became a principal and then they became a contract or whatever. So now how are you finding, how do you like the pace of the daytime schedule and the daytime TV shooting?
Oh, I mean, it's great. I mean, it's intense. It has to be 100% your focus. And it's a fantastic thing. I mean, it's like there are days if we're doing like several episodes, sometimes two episodes in a day or, you know, 3 days back to back or, you know, cause I feel like the contract folks have at least two shows a week, if not more than that.
They have like a guarantee.
Right. And then for the, you know, recurring folks, we, you know, like the more you get, the more of a blessing it is. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So like there were weeks where I was shooting three episodes in, you know, 3 or 4 days. And that pace was, you know, that pace is no joke. I mean, you got, you know, usually 20, 25 pages of scripts, you know, per episode. And sometimes the turnaround time, like one time we got out at like 9:30 and we had to be back on set at 7. So it was a scene. The scene where we had to be back the next morning was when I was showing Cynthia around, showing Nina around, around Nixon Falls. And it was a real heavy dialogue between just two people. And so that pace, you know, it was intense. But, I mean, it's like, you know, I think that's what makes an artist or any professional is the ability to have whatever problem or whatever piece or whatever thrown at them and be able to turn it around really quickly. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, if you hired a piano player for a wedding, the night before, you wouldn't want them to be like, well, I gotta go over this music for a couple of weeks.
Well, the other thing is when you've done, like, we all have, when you do the one, when you do the network hour shows, right, when you go do, like, you've done Empire, Chicago Med, all those, you know how much time is, quote, wasted. You know how much you sit around or whatever. What I love about a daytime schedule is it's quick. I mean, unless the camera knocks you to the ground, you know, it's pretty much hit it and go. And you're not going to sit around for hours waiting on setups and stuff like that. So I love the pace of it. And another thing, like you're talking about, when you have people like Cynthia Watros, some of our listeners may not know, but no, here's an actress who started in daytime, won Emmys in daytime, went and had an incredible nighttime career, you know, with series regulars on Lost and the Drew Carey Show, and you know, is back on daytime. There's no boundaries anymore about daytime, nighttime, film, you know, work is work, and you're getting to work with these amazing people. Well, they're getting to work with you. Let's say it that way.
that is very generous, sir. I do appreciate that. But I mean, the honor and the pleasure are truly mine. To be able to step, to be able to step on the set with Cynthia, with Maurice. You know, I mean, it's like folks just be having Emmys up in there. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Kathleen Gotti, who's a dear friend of mine, Kathleen is another one that she, I think her role initially was supposed to be like two episodes. And now she's been reoccurring for years on there. You know, she plays the Hungarian doctor. I forget her character's name, and then Jeff Kober, who plays Cyrus, I believe he was another one that, you know, that was supposed to be a couple of episode, and he just got his first supporting actor Emmy nomination last week. So,
right.
I think we'll be seeing your name this time next year.
Oh, that you'll lift to God's ears, brother. I appreciate that, man.
Dan, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
This is from actor to actor. It's so great. You're so gregarious. It's nice to hear your stories, and it's very easy to hear you say things like, yeah, well, you know, we get 20 to 25 pages of dialogue, and we had a fast turnaround from 9 to 7, a 10-hour turnaround, where I had to have heavy dialogue with my co-actor, just the two of us. So my question, and that all sounds great, and it's like, wow, how did you do it? What is your process? How do you learn all those mother lines?
You know what?
Called a paycheck.
Right. Like, you not want to, like, I now want to go up there and not know.
Fear and money. Okay, thanks. Thank you. Moving on.
Right,
no, I'm
kidding.
I mean, we've all had those dreams, right? That reoccurring dream where we go on stage or we get on set and we don't know our lines at all. Don't even know where we are.
Oh man, yeah, that is a nightmare. That is, I'll tell you a funny story. I seriously do want to address what Ralph was saying, like seriously about how we do it.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend of mine. I pay a friend to drill the lines with me until I got them. So I was up late that night, but you know, literally. I called in support on that. Mm-hmm. I heard Robert Downey Jr. was talking on the Actor Studio some years ago about the RADA method, which is where you write the first letter of each word and you memorize it that way. And that is great, and that really does work if you have a little bit more time than tomorrow.
Right.
But I think that's a fantastic method too, that really works in scene study. But I literally just pay somebody to drill me with the lines.
I see.
Until I have it, and it really, really works because if they're reading the cue lines, that helps with that as well. So I think that if I had to know something really quickly, that's what I do, and that is per Gloria Gifford, who I emailed from set, and I'm like, Gloria, I'm freaking out. I thought I was gonna be out at 5. I'm not gonna be out. And we just got a call. She's like, all right, and she sent me one of my classmates who stayed with me on the phone for 3 hours until I had the thing down.
Wow.
God,
well,
that's thank
you,
Dan, for answering that.
Oh, my pleasure. I mean,
you know,
every
show is different, too, because I have friends that work on Days of Our Lives and Y&R. Do you guys work – do you do the split shift, like the day, half a day – people come in and then a second shift comes later, or are you there like 12 hours a day?
Oh no. I was never there 12 hours. Even the first day we shot, my call time was 6:45. We did 2 episodes. I was out of there at 11. I was like, what do I do now? You know what I mean?
Oh my God. That is heaven. Because you know, you go on these 1 hour shows and you're there like 15 hours a day, you know, in your trailer waiting.
See, the thing with that is, I know exactly what you mean. Those situations are, I'm in my trailer and I'm just like, you know, playing a video game on my iPad or something like that. And I'm just like chilling and just like reveling in the fact that I'm working. You know,
right.
I mean?
Right.
So,
yes.
Right,
you
that
know,
you're working
I,
and that you directed the video game that you're watching. Okay, and go.
Right. Sometimes, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this.
When you go on.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you know, actors will ask this a lot of times, especially in daytime with this. Do you feel like every show is different? Do you have to be letter perfect? I know you are and you try to be, but is there pressure from the producers? Are there times when you and the other actor can rehearse it and sort of make the scene close to what's written, or do you try to stick letter perfect?
Great question. I try to stay as letter perfect as possible.
Mm-hmm.
They're not gonna yell cut in the middle of the scene. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Unless it's just
right.
Unless it's throwing.
Unless,
I mean, really, I've seen that where it's like somebody said instead of the, and you know, the scene was stopped and said, well, you know, you don't have to stop it for that or whatever. I'm not even talking about on GH per se, but just in my experience.
Right.
With GH, they want you to be word perfect because, you know, they pay the writers a lot of money to write these words. So it's like,
right.
Give these people their propers. The turnaround is pretty fast, though.
Right.
The turnaround
now, we
is
haven't
fast,
even,
so, like,
we,
the more word perfect you can be, the easier it is for the time, you
mm-hmm.
know, for the production.
Well, we haven't even talked about sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm saying, so did I answer your question? I try to be as word perfect as I can, just out of consideration for the writers and respect for them and the other actors.
Oh, yeah. It's going to lead me to the question about rehearsals. You know, you've been doing this during COVID, and so pre-COVID, you know, a lot of times actors would be able to maybe – get together and run it. You do the blocking and stuff. But my friends who work now in daytime were telling me that, is it true if you're kind of rehearsing with the person on the phone, like from dressing room to dressing room, or are you actually getting to run it with, say, Cynthia? Or
with this situation, yes. Like, I mean, because we were both kind of like, especially that particular day, we were both there late and had to be right back. So we just sat in the green room and just rocked it for like an hour, which I was very, very thankful for.
Right.
Typically though, I mean, like, you know, with the COVID regulations, you don't really see too many people that aren't directly in the scene with you, or that you don't have a reason to have direct contact with, just to minimize every the risk. So I suspect, you know, we're pre COVID, or, you know, maybe a couple years from now, I'm sure it'll be a lot more open and we'll be able to get together a lot more. But in these situations though, and when I was running the lines with my friend Samaya, like we were on FaceTime.
Right.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. I know pre COVID, like, especially with daytime, you know, actors would like come to each other's dressing room and try to run it before you did the blocking and that kind of thing. And now I, you know, it all has changed. So had you worked other jobs during COVID, or was GH your first one?
Yeah, I've done a lot of, I did a film last fall, and I've done voiceover throughout, whether it's directing or performing, and everything like that. And the voiceover stuff, sometimes I direct from home via Zoom.
Right.
And then I'm in the booth. I'll go into the booth at whatever studio, and it's super isolated. When I did the film in October, it was, you know, we had our rapid testing and, you know, social distancing. But, I mean, the person I was running my stuff with for the scene, we were able to do it in a kind of a socially distanced way. But everybody had a negative COVID test, you know, and gotten the results the day before. So we were all, you know, relatively, I mean, you know, as far as all the precautions we could take, we had taken them. So it wasn't too much different.
Well, Ralph and I've been lucky enough. I mean, I've worked during COVID like two or three times. Ralph has chosen Ralph has yet to do that, but every actor who we speak to has had sort of a different experience. But I wanted to ask you now since vaccinations, I know the testing remains the same, but do you feel even on the set a little bit more of a, what is the word? A little bit more relaxed, just knowing that most people have been vaccinated?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I got the first dose of the Moderna shot like right before, like maybe the week before I was cast, and then I heard the second dose took you out, so I didn't get the second dose for a minute, but once I certainly felt a lot better. I mean, after the first dose, they said that you're 50%. You know, your resistance is up to 50%, and then the second dose, you know, with Moderna and Pfizer, I think kicked it up to like 95 plus. Or
right.
So I certainly felt better about it. And like I said, we'll get those COVID tests. I mean, they had the rapid one the day of, and then they had the ones that, you know, you would take the day before, and we were, you know, they were very, very particular about that.
So now, like, say, like, when you say you're working tomorrow or on GH, do you have to get tested before, or do you just get tested when you get there, or how does that work now?
Yeah, you test the day before.
Day before, got it. Okay, yeah, it's all been, every show is different, you know. So, but listen, before time runs out, I wanted to talk to you about your voiceover career. You know, the voiceover world is a world unto itself, and once you've been able to crack that nut, so to speak, as you have, did you start out doing voiceovers from the beginning? Was that something that, how did that happen for you?
Yeah, so I started doing radio. I was doing radio back in Jackson. I started gospel radio, and then I went to R&B, and then I went to hip-hop. And fast forward, I used to always imitate like Isaac Hayes and Barry White. and even a character that was on Snoop Dogg's first record, this DJ that did all these skits. So I was interning out here one summer, and then fast forward 5 years later, the friend of mine who I was interning for said, "Hey, remember that voice you would always do? Come do it for this. I'm doing this pilot, and I want you to for the theme song and do all the teasers and breaks. And if the show gets picked up, then you'll be the voice and you'll sing the theme song." I said, "Cool." And the show ended up being number one on MTV for like 5 years.
Wow.
It was a show about cars called Pimp My Ride.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
So that was how I got into voiceover. My first job was saying, "So you want to be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You got to hit that stuff to get a pimp out ride." So that was my entry to the professional voiceover world in Los Angeles. And since then, video games, cartoons, commercials. I did a Taco Bell campaign. I was the voice of the $6 burger for Carl Jr. A lot of different really cool things. And then I did a project a couple years ago, and the director was, I mean, not the director, but the producer was also a CalArts guy who happened to be from Jackson.
Wow.
Named Bo Crutcher. And he's one of the leaders at Blind Light Studios, and that's how I got into directing and everything like that. And I've been directing for the last couple of years. And it's really fantastic to do it, because I'm an actor, so I know how to talk to another actor and get to the performance. So it's been a wonderful journey thus far. Of course, with on camera and voiceover as well. I mean, and we're artists, so we make art. So,
well, Dan, what's amazing is like what you're saying about even the way you broke into voiceovers. I tell actors all the time, like, everybody, things happen, right? Like, you couldn't, taking a workshop didn't get you that job. You know what I mean? It's like everybody's story is so different of how they break into the business. And so that's why I wanted you to talk about the voiceover thing, because everybody comes at it in different ways. And so if you were to go back and try to plan it, you were like, you couldn't have planned it to think that's what's going to happen. And then suddenly you're going to have a voiceover career, which is kind of like what happens with our acting career. But we don't, you know, when we first start and we're young, we don't get that. You know, we have to realize that later after we've been in the business for a while. So,
I do want to add one thing to that really quickly. While I was doing Pimp My Ride, I was in class at the VoiceCaster taking a commercial workshop and an animation workshop.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, an opportunity will present itself and you get your foot in the door, but the craft and working on the craft is what keeps you in the door. So, you know, the through line there is, yes, I was very fortunate to get that break, but the first thing I did was take the advice of a mentor and jump in class.
Excellent. Well, Dan, I want to ask you just as a random question. Have you ever gotten the pleasure or opportunity to work with Rolanda Watts?
I haven't worked with Rolanda Watts. I have a lot of respect for her, though. She's a veteran and a wonderful person from what I've seen.
Okay, thank you.
Well, good. Well, truth be told, she's a great colleague. She's a great person. I'm actually going to be taking her masterclass voiceover workshop starting in June, because I did a scripted audio series that got some attention this summer, and she thinks I would do really well in the video game world, playing the bad guys and the kind of characters I play. So yeah, so I'm actually taking her workshop starting in a couple of weeks for a voiceover. So that's sort of what happened to me. I ended up getting this opportunity to do a lead and a scripted audio series. But because of that, I now want to go and actually learn to know what the hell I'm doing, right? And to expand my possibilities. So, and that's why we love Rolanda. And she's had this amazing voiceover career as well as on camera, like, you know, all of us. So, hey, down the road, maybe, you know what, maybe you'll be directing a video game I'm voicing. So who knows? But in the meantime, keep kicking ass over at General Hospital and, you know, come back anytime. It's never long enough on the show for sure.
Yeah, listen, Dan, come back that, and yeah. come back and make some catfish so Denise Boutte can put some Louisiana sauce on it.
Yeah.
Oh, now you're talking.
Well, listen, buddy, continued success and stay healthy and hope to meet you in person one day soon. But just keep up the great work over there.
Thank you so much, my friend. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. This was fantastic. Ralph, Jasper, thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Dan. Take care. Have a great evening. Thank you. All right. Wow, I love fellow actors. He's
fellow
fantastic.
Actors that are gregarious. He is a fantastic man. So that was a very good interview, as all of our interviews are. I mean, God, like, you know, we bring out the best in people. The best in people come to us. Thank you, Lisa Rodrigo. Thank you for everyone that wants to be on our show and talk to us. You know, Dan White is great because he is no joke about, and you're the same, got the job. Let me learn the craft even more, you know, so it's.
And I feel like there's a kinship because with all three of us, you know, we've been in the game. And what I love about him too is like, I just want all young actors listening, just, you know, so he meets Mark Teshner 18 years ago and 18 years later, he books General Hospital after, you know what I mean? Like after many auditions and screen tests. And so for all the actors out there who think, you know, I didn't book that job, so that means I didn't do a great job. It's not about that. It's about you just continue to show up, do great work, and, you know, when your time comes, it'll be your time. And so it's amazing. Well, Ralph, thank you so much, everyone. We're back. We'll have next week. We are going to be joined by amazing stand-up comedian, former writer, producer on the original Roseanne series, now author of her new book, Lois Bromfield. We go back 30 years, much to talk about. I'm reading her book now and I'm laughing and I'm crying because we have a dear friend, Steve Moore, that she dedicates an entire chapter to. We'll talk about that when she's going to be here next Thursday, same place, same time.
Yay.
Ralph, give Rose a big hug from Dennis and I.
Thank you, Jasper. Thank you, Dennis.
And much love. And everyone, thank you for everything. And we'll be back next week, same time, same place. Bye.
Bye-bye, planet Eartha.
Thanks for checking out One-on-One with Jasper Cole. Check out past episodes and get the latest as they're released. Subscribe today on iTunes, Stitcher, and YouTube.